So we're going to hear first from Jeff Cohen. And Jeff Cohen, who's the author of Cable News Confidential, which is the book that is on the back table that you'll be able to buy at the end of the evening. He worked for MSNBC as an on-air commentator and senior producer of Donahue until the show was terminated on the eve of the Iraq War. He founded Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR. Co-hosted CNN's Crossfire, was a weekly panelist on Fox News Channel's Newswatch, and appeared frequently on many national TV and radio programs, including The Today Show, Larry King Live, The O'Reilly Factor, C-SPAN, and NPR. Polly Point Press is the publisher of his book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in the Corporate Media. And we have a quote from Molly Ivins about Jeff. Jeff Cohen's dissection of cable TV news is both irresistibly funny and civically painful. It goes from uproarious anecdotes to those that make you wince. Please welcome Jeff Cohen.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. It was a little harrowing getting over that hill. It's great to be at a place that has Ann and Media Watch and a lot of media critics in this community. I've been watching a lot of mainstream media lately, thanks a lot. And the message has been unmistakable. You know, we've really got reason to rejoice because the system works and the realists are out to run foreign policy again. I know many of us, when we voted, we intended to say with our vote, let's withdraw from Iraq. But, you know, with James Baker now and Gates and the wise men taking over, these are exciting times. Never mind that there will be tens of thousands of U.S. troops there indefinitely under the plan, up to 70,000. Never mind it's about privatizing Iraq's oil. And even though most Iraqis and most Americans want withdrawal, I've been reading the New York Times very closely, like a Kremlinologist used to read Pravda, and I know that withdrawal is not a viable option, because they say that over and over. But, you know, if you're waiting for someone to ask James Baker a tough question, you might have caught Brian Williams, the anchor of the biggest nightly news show, NBC, and this is what he asked Baker. Where does this rank, Mr. Secretary, among all the service you've provided to your country? That's not a great segue into some real interrogation, which is what we needed. Many of you know me as the founder of FAIR, a proud, self-respecting media critic. But that's the good news. The bad news is I went through a slow-motion Alice in Wonderland nightmare over a period of years where I went from media critic to media pundit embedded inside the mainstream media. That's what the new book is about. Today there are half a dozen giant conglomerates sitting on the windpipe of the First Amendment, restricting the flow of news and information. I've taken paychecks from three of them. So I know of what I speak. I was an on-air pundit at all three cable news channels until my career ended at MSNBC 3 weeks before the war. It says a lot, I think, about TV news today that the best programs about news and politics are on the comedy channel. That says a lot about journalism today. I worked with some good people inside the mainstream media, even at Fox News, where I was for 5 years, but these are almost entirely lower level, mid-level journalists, sometimes energetic, conscientious, but powerless, especially powerless with the approach of a war. Mainstream news outlets are strict corporate hierarchies. The power's at the top at a place like NBC, MSNBC. That means the power is in the hands of the owner, General Electric, which makes handsome profits from war. In our country, you always hear people of all political persuasions say that they favor a meritocracy, especially conservatives, a system where you advance based on individual ability and achievement. But in our country and in our corporate media, we have the exact opposite of that. The dictionary has a word for it. It's called kakistocracy. Literally, it means rule by the worst. It's where the least principled the least qualified rise to the top. You could see that in the run-up to the Iraq War. If you ask tough questions about what evidence is there that Iraq represents a threat, if you warned about the chaos that would result, like me, you've probably been spat out of the media system. But if you echoed the official deceptions, you've seen your career flourish. I'm not aware of a single TV news executive or anchor or correspondent or so-called expert who lost a job for getting such a huge story in the run-up to the Iraq War so totally wrong, as almost all of them did. When I was at MSNBC, there was a hawkish host there. I must say he doesn't have his show anymore. That's because he's been kicked upstairs. He's the general manager of the channel now. Those who rise to the top in the mainstream media are usually much better at corporate politics and not offending the powers that be than they are at independent journalism. In the summer of 2002, I debated and opposed the Iraq invasion week after week on MSNBC, and the rule was I couldn't appear on TV without being balanced by at least one fire-breathing right-winger. But my debates were terminated as the war came closer, replaced by non-debate segments featuring the former colonels and generals, the former CIA officers, the alleged weapons of mass destruction experts. These people didn't have to be in debates or balanced in any way because they were independent, objective experts. Over at CNN, though, the news president, Eason Jordan, he admitted that he got prior government approval for his former generals. He boasted of it on CNN. He said, quote, "I went to the Pentagon several times before the war, and I met with important people there, and I said, here are the generals we're thinking of retaining to advise us on the air and off about the war. We got a big thumbs up on all of them. That was important," unquote. Virtually everything these experts said unopposed through the mainstream media was wrong. After no weapons of mass destruction were found, it's fun to look at the excuses you get from these people that dominated the media for months. I have all these quotes in the book. And then it's fun to see what they said afterwards. One expert who was appearing over and over was the former CIA analyst Ken Pollack, Brookings Institution scholar. He pushed relentlessly for an invasion. He went on the Oprah show and he said, not only do they have weapons of mass destruction, they can strike us in the U.S. mainland with those weapons. Afterwards, he offered this excuse for all his mistakes. He said, quote, that was not me making that claim. That was me parroting the claims of the so-called experts. But he never once objected when he was introduced as the expert. Pollack, has he suffered any consequences for getting it all wrong? No, if you read the New York Times as closely as me, you see that he's one of the experts today saying how dangerous it would be if we withdrew troops from Iraq. On NBC and MSNBC, the chief military analyst was retired General Barry McCaffrey. He was Clinton's drug czar. We know him well from his persecution of people here in California. His comments before the war and during the invasion were completely wrong. Has he suffered any consequences? No, he's still NBC's chief military analyst on the air. When the invasion began, it was McCaffrey who literally thanked God for the Abrams tank and the Bradley fighting vehicle. What viewers didn't know is that he's on the board of a military contractor that makes millions of dollars for work on the Bradley and the Abrams. In the mainstream media during the run-up to the war, I wasn't just a pundit. I was also hired at MSNBC to be behind the scenes, a senior producer on Donahue. We were trying to get tough questions asked and answered. But as I said at the beginning, these media outlets are strict corporate hierarchy. The power is at the top. We were ordered in the last months of Donahue, every time we booked one guest who was anti-war, we had to book two that were pro-war. If we booked two guests on the left, we had to book three on the right. At one meeting, a producer proposed booking Michael Moore and was told for political balance she would need three right-wingers. I thought about proposing Chomsky as a guest. You understand the problems we would have had. Our stage couldn't accommodate the 38 right-wingers we would have needed. Weeks before the invasion, I made my final appearance on MSNBC. Why? I was asked to debate Frank Gaffney. Gaffney had convinced someone in power. He's the Uber hawk, former Reagan defense official. He convinced someone at MSNBC that he should get on the air to point out that not only was Saddam Hussein behind 9/11, but he was involved with Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing. I swear to God. It wasn't one of my proudest moments. I describe it all in the book when I told Gaffney that he was in need of immediate psychiatric care. As I say, it was the last time I ever appeared on MSNBC. But the people like Gaffney who got it all wrong, the people like Ann Coulter, the people like Reverend Falwell, no matter how outlandish they are, no matter how wrong they are, if they're right wing, they are repeat guests on American TV, which always caters to the far right. Many media voices were totally wrong about Iran, Iraq, and now they're blowing smoke at Iran. None of them are held accountable for getting the last war so totally wrong. How many people watch Glenn Beck on CNN's Headline News? He's a guy every night. His show could be called Target Iran. It's, you know, he's got Iran behind every evil in the world, except maybe menopause, although that's not an evil. You know, I don't want to say that's an evil. We all go. But CNN hired Beck after he'd been totally wrong, pushing for the Iraq war, calling Cindy Sheehan a prostitute, fantasizing on the air about strangling Michael Moore to death, praying for the violent death of Congressman Kucinich. Now, in late that's sort of what these guys, CNN knew all of this before they hired him, and now he's pushing for new military action. In late 2002, and Donahue, we would try to book one of the most articulate dissenting voices in America then and now, and that was Scott Ritter. And when we would do it, we would always hear this smear that he's covertly taking funds from Saddam Hussein. It was a false charge, but it was really ironic a couple years later when I learned one of these right-wingers I used to debate all the time on MSNBC, he was indeed receiving covert funds. The covert funder was the Bush administration. I'm talking about Armstrong Williams. He received $250,000 from the Department of Education to push No Child Left Behind. They didn't invite me into the No Pundit Left Behind program. That was just the other guys. It'd be a mistake, of course, to say that there's no debate about war in the mainstream media. There's a lot of debates, but they're always within limits. The limits are that you basically have to debate tactics and not motives or morality. You can say the war was ill-planned, it was ill-executed, we didn't have enough troops, we still don't have enough troops. That's acceptable. But if you go from tactics and question motives, if you say that this war had something to do with oil or military bases in the Middle East or Israel or empire or domestic political concerns for Bush, then you're not ready for TV. That's why Donahue was terminated 3 weeks before the war. My friend Dennis Kucinich did get on before the war, and he said that based on all of the nonsensical rationales that are being put forward that make no sense, he can only conclude that oil was the major factor. And 2 days later, one of the columnists at the Washington Post was fuming at Kucinich, writing, he's one of the liberals there, Richard Cohen, he wrote about Kucinich, how did this fool get on Meet the Press? Of course, only a fool could suggest that corporate interests and oil interests have something to do with U.S. foreign policy. We're supposed to believe that when the CIA overthrew the parliamentary democracy of Iran in 1953, it wasn't about oil. It must have been, you know, Brussels sprouts, I think, cabbage, yogurt. The coup that installed the bloody Shah was indeed about oil. Iran's parliament had nationalized the oil industry. The CIA guy who led the coup a couple years later left the CIA for a job at Gulf Oil, which was given chunks of the oil industry because of the U.S. puppet, the Shah. That coup helped build the religious fundamentalist movement that governs Iran today. According to Washington Post and liberals, though, oil couldn't have anything to do with U.S. foreign policy. When Donahue was terminated on the eve of the war, it was MSNBC's most watched program. If you can tell me any other time where a channel has canceled its highest rated show, I'd love to hear about it. The day after, an internal NBC memo leaked out that was never supposed to get public. It gave the real reasons for the muzzling. It said Donahue represents, quote, a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives. There's motives again. You can't do that. You can't do motives. You can argue about tactics. You can never question the justness and pro-democracy and freedom-lovingness of U.S. foreign policy. The NBC memo went on to describe their nightmare scenario where Donahue would become, quote, a home for the liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors are waving the flag at every opportunity, unquote. NBC solution, get rid of Donahue, stifle dissent, pick up the flag. When you're so busy expending energy waving flags, what we saw in the run-up to the war, you don't have the energy as a journalist to do your job, which is to ask the tough questions before our young people are sent overseas to kill and be killed. As Donahue was being terminated as a, quote, difficult public face for NBC, MSNBC was hiring the talk radio bigot Michael Savage. That Donahue was deemed an inappropriate public face, but Savage was an appropriate public face, says more to debunk the myth of a liberal media than 30 books could do. About 6 days after they announced they were hiring Savage, I got an email from the president of MSNBC, as everyone did, the whole staff of MSNBC, inviting us to go to mandatory diversity workshops. Swear to God. This is Michael Savage, who says Latinos breed like rabbits. Women should have been denied the right to vote. He refers to black kids that are victims of gun violence as ghetto slime. The Million Moms March for Gun Control was the Million Dykes March. I decided not to go to the diversity workshops because I could learn more about the management's true feelings on diversity by listening to their latest hire talk about dykes and ghetto slime. I want to finish with the good news, and the book finishes with the good news. The reason to be optimistic. The independent media are absolutely booming today. There's a mass migration. The corporate media are being delegitimized. Independent blogs that started in 2002 now have millions of viewers. Websites like commondreams.org and Alternet and Tom Paine and you name it, ZNet, have growing memberships and viewerships and readerships. Crooksandliars.com. How many people have ever gone to that one? It's a great one. Guerrilla News Network. There's so many of them. The internet has been a key to so much growth in independent media. Robert Greenwald finances his documentaries by asking us to become producers and give him $50. And then he finds his market through the internet. That movie, Attacking the Corporate Media, outfoxed. And by the way, when MSNBC got rid of Donahue, they achieved the impossible. They outfoxed Fox News. That's not easy. That movie, Outfoxed, when it was released in the summer of 2004, was the top-selling DVD on Amazon. So there's great things that are happening. The right wing may dominate talk TV and talk radio. Progressives and independent people dominate the internet. That's why we have to save it as a free forum for citizen information. And that means we have to protect it from the big phone companies and the big cable companies that want to wreck it. And because the Democrats have Congress now, and they're never great shakes, but it's important on this issue, go to savetheinternet.com, and we all, this is now an opportunity to impose net neutrality so the bigwigs cannot ruin the internet, which is really the key to alternative media today. Media activism has vastly increased. You have Media Watch here. You have national groups like Free Press that are going to be hosting a huge conference in Memphis next month. 3,000 activists are expected, if not more. And when we talked about media activism 20 years ago when we started FAIR, and media activism I define as either one, you're challenging corporate media and deconstructing them and delegitimizing them, two, you're building independent media, or three, you're working for media reform to try to restructure the media system toward diversity and toward democracy. You know, we were a little quixotic 20 years ago when we started with our slogan, but it's not so quixotic anymore. Don't take the media lying down. Thank you very much. Scott? Oh.